VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the Internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us on a program that we trust you'll find very educational and informative today. In protests all over the country, you've heard them, I've heard them, we've heard the chants, this is what democracy looks like, this is what democracy looks like. And in addition to that, we are constantly hearing members of Congress, leadership, talking about our democracy, and this happening, our democracy. I know I hear from our own congresswoman here talking about our democracy all the time. Yet in our Pledge of Allegiance, we state this: I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. So what is the United States of America? Are we a democracy or are we a republic? And how do these compare to other forms of government, such as a monarchy, an oligarchy, a dictatorship, or even an anarchy? Well, joining us in discussion on this very important educational issue today, we welcome back William J. Federer. Bill is a nationally known speaker, historian, best-selling author, president of Amerisearch Incorporated. That's a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. He's the speaker on the American Minute daily broadcast. He has authored numerous books, including America's God and Country, Encyclopedia of Quotations, which has sold over 500,000 copies. There's the original 13, a documentary history of religion in America's first 13 states, a socialism, the real history from Plato to the present, and Who is the King in America? An overview of 6,000 years of history and why America is unique. Bill, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
Jim, great to be with you.
We're going to be looking at a number of forms of government today, but to the main core question, is the United States of America a democracy or republic, and what is the difference between the two?
Well, America is set up as a democratically elected constitutional republic, and I'll take that apart. Democracy. The word has two meanings. One is an actual form of government in which the people rule and the majority of the people can decide to get rid of the 49%. The Founding Fathers referred to that as a mobocracy. They did not like that. The second definition of the word democracy is became popular during the Cold War. And Harry S. Truman, in his inaugural address, talked about the Soviet Union dictating everyone's life with police state. But in America, we're a democracy. We believe in freedom of religion and so forth. The Cold War definition of democracy is simply popular government. In other words, demos means people, crossing means rule. It's a general reference to the people having a say in their form of government. Now, to understand, we have to go back to origins of where these words came from. Now, the most common form of government in world history is kings, from Nimrod, Tower of Babel, to the Egyptian pharaohs, to Alexander the Great, and Cyrus of Persia, and the Roman emperors. As the centuries go on, these kingdoms would get bigger because with military advancements, the king can kill more people.
Okay, so we're talking, that's monarchy, right?
Monarchy, dictatorship, despot. A monarch, with the French political philosopher Montesquieu, a monarch was basically a king with strings attached.
Okay.
A despot is a king with no strings attached. So, and Montesquieu said a despot is most prevalent in Islamic countries, where you have a sultan who is not limited by anything. He wakes up one day, decides to kill somebody, he kills him. You know, and Ivan the Terrible of Russia was considered a despot. He killed his own son. But a king, one of the ways that I look at it is if you think of the power as a spectrum, one side's total government, the other side's no government. Total government, you have a black hole, gravity just sucks, keeps sucking it in until power goes from the people to fewer people, which is called an oligarchy, to fewer and fewer, you know, deep state ruling class. But finally, you get to a king and one person, and he's limited by certain things. But then finally, you get to a despot king who's not limited by anything. He's just evil. And that's where you got when Satan came to Jesus and said, bow down and worship me, and I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world because they're mine, and I can give them to whoever I want. He's like, whoa, that's pretty audacious. When did Satan get all these kingdoms? when Adam sinned, Adam got to name everything in the garden. Naming implies authority over. So Adam was the authority in the garden under God. And the Bible says, to whomever you yield your members' servants to obey, to him you are a servant. So the moment Adam obeyed Satan and ate from the tree, he was posturing himself as the servant and the devil as being in charge. And so from that time on, the devil was the, Satan was the quote-unquote God of this world, this cosmos, this world system. So we have kings, and they would rule with their caprices. They were called tyrants and despots. And so the first limitation on a king was his own words. And we see this in the Bible where there's the king of, you know, Babylon or, you know, Persia, and he is wanting to have a party, and he tells his wife Vashti to come and let everybody see how beautiful she is, and she says no. And the king's so upset, he says, I'm not never going to see you again. And then later he feels bad about it, and he wants to see her, and his advisor said, King, you gave your word that you will not see her again. You cannot break your word. And he's like all upset. They said, we'll tell you what, we'll get all the virgins of the kingdom, and that's when they found Esther.
Mm-hmm.
But here the king was living, and then later when Darius takes over, and he really likes Daniel, but these wicked counselors say, hey, nobody prays to you for 30 days, except to you for 30 days, and they catch Daniel. And the king wants to get him off the hook, and these advisors say, King, you gave your word, that, and he broke it. You cannot change. You've got to throw him in the lion's den. And, of course, he did, and he says, may your God be with you, and, of course, Daniel survived, and but this idea was the king was limited by his own words. So that's the first limit on power. And in a biblical sense, that is sort of scriptural, where what do we do when we pray? We hold God's word up to him. And we say, God, you said this. We're trusting in your word. You're not a liar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we see that kings would be limited by past kings' words. So we got the Cyrus lets the Jews go back, rebuild the temple. A couple years go by, there's a new king, some of the pagans try to get the Jews to stop, and they say, no, the Cyrus gave his order, and the new king digs around, and in some palace library, they find the old order, and the new king honors the old king's words. So this new king is limited by a previous king's words. Over time, that turned into what's called customs and traditions, and so kings are now limited by that. Then kings are limited by religion. So these kings, even pagan kings, claim to be divinely appointed. The Egyptian pharaohs claim to be the son of the god Osiris, and the Babylonian kings claim to be, you know, king priests, and the Chinese emperors claim to be, you know, ruled by having a mandate from heaven, and the Indian Maharajas claim to be a semi-divine ruling class, and then in Europe, they called it the divine right of kings. And so these kings ruled, and so they sort of needed the religious class to affirm that they have the blessings of heaven to rule. And so these kings would sort of be limited. So this ruling class would every now and then flex their power. If you remember in Egypt, the Pharaoh took away all the land from the people,
right.
But he did not take the land away from the Egyptian priests. Because he needed them to like him so they could continue to say that, hey, you're appointed by Horus or whatever pagan god they have there. Now, when you have Christian kings, they're limited by religion in a good sense, in the fact that the clergy would say, look, king, you're accountable to the eternal judge. And so you better be nice to these people underneath you and judge fairly because, you know, you're going to be judged with the same judgment that you judge. And so the religion had a limit on the power of a king. And then we see instances where kings are limited by public opinion. So even a dictator likes the people to say nice things about him. And so he's sort of swayed by what that is. And I'll get into that in a minute. The second is the king collects taxes. And so he has to have people collecting the tax. And so these would be his assistants that would turn into dukes and lords and princes. And he would give them the authority to go out and collect the taxes. But he'd have to give them some weapons to be able to do that. Well, sometimes these princes and these dukes would team up against the king. and they would say, okay, you know, we sort of don't like this. And this came to a fruition with the, you know, the Magna Carta. There were 25 barons in England, and King John was arbitrarily arresting them, throwing them in jail. And so they, one day they say, hey, we want to have a little meeting. The king comes out of his castle, comes over the hill, and there is the armies of his 25 barons, and they surround him, block his way back into the castle. So now he's like stuck. And that's when they say, look, you can't throw one of us in jail without due process. You can't take away our land. And so they finally force him to sign the Magna Carta. And so this is the beginning of these documents. King still didn't want to go along with it, but he was pressured to by these princes, these dukes. And so this turned into kings being limited by the noblemen. And then finally, they began to have these noblemen would group together and officially get the term Parliament, House of Lords. And then they had representatives from the people, House of Commons in England. Other countries didn't have that. King Louis XIV of France was an absolute monarch. They called him the Sun King. And all of his advisors were planets that revolved around him every day. And there was no representative, nothing. He just, but in England, we begin to see the kings get limited by parliaments and then ultimately by Magna Cartas and constitutions and saying, okay, we got this document. It's written. You signed it or a previous king signed it. You're locked to it. Kings would try to come out from under that from time to time, and you had tensions and so forth. Finally, America comes along, and we say, forget trying to limit a king. We're flat out going to cut the umbilical cord, and we're not going to have a king.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we're going to actually flip it and make the people the king. So the word citizen is Greek. It means co-king. And so instead of a top-down form of government, it's a bottom-up form of government, where all the citizens are co-regents. Right? You talked about pledging allegiance to the flag and to the republic. A republic is where the people are king, ruling through representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I don't know if we have time now or after the break, but I can explain the difference between a republic and a democracy.
Let's do that. We got 1 minute before the break, so take advantage of that minute.
So they're had Athens, and they. If you look at a map of the world, you got China on one side. For 5,000 years, they've always had emperors. A couple times, you'd have some kings want to break away, and the people would want to do something different, and the emperor would show up with a 100,000-man army, rip the walls down around your city. And enough people said, we need walls. He goes, okay, I'll build the Great Wall. That'll keep the Mongols out. But so China never had a experiment with self-rule. The other side of the map is the Mediterranean. And you have islands and seas and storms and water, and it's really hard to have a dictatorship with all these variables. And so in the Mediterranean, we see these experiments, and we look at the Greek city-states, but ultimately Athens. So demos means people, crossing means rule, and there were 6,000 citizens in Athens, and they would meet every day in the Agora marketplace to talk politics.
And we're going to have to pick up with that after the break. Bill Federer is with us here today. Republic versus democracy and other forms of government are a topic today, and giving us a history lesson in this regard. And after the break, we're going right back to Athens to get more information here. 1 minute from now, we'll be back with Bill Federer here on Crosstalk on VCY.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is any progress being made in cloning attempts?
Chris, there is a lot of work in cloning going on these days, but all is not so rosy in clone land. Often when clones are born, they exhibit diseases which normally are restricted to older specimens. For instance, Dolly the sheep, the first mammal cloned, died of old age about the same time as her mother died of old age. Recently, 4 cloned pigs all died of old age-related diseases within 6 months of being born. This should make us stop and think before cloning humans. Are we going to have elderly babies? It's not really known yet. There are a lot of good reasons not to go ahead with human cloning. This is just one of them. It's best to go back to Genesis and recognize that humans are created in the image of God and therefore deserve protection.
Visit our website at www.icr.org.
William J. Federer, our guest here today in Crosstalk. So what are we, a republic or a democracy? Well, we're discussing that here today in other forms of government. Bill giving us a history lesson here today. A little bit later, we'll tell you how you can obtain a copy of his book and DVD entitled Who Was the King in America? So, Bill, let's take us right back. You're answering that question now of the difference between a republic and a democracy, and you left us off in Athens before the break.
So, Athens, 622 B.C., had a king named Draco, and he would rule by his whims and caprices. He was a tyrant. And the people of Athens says, well, king, at least write these things down so we have some consistency to our lives. And he did. And it was the death penalty for every other thing. And so they were called draconian laws because he was King Draco. These very, very harsh laws. That's where the word draconian comes from. Well, he finally dies. They get a new king in 694 BC. His name is Solon, S-O-L-O-N. And Solon invents democracy. And demos means people, crossing means rule. And then Solon left town to go on this grand tour of the Egypt and Persians. And so he left the people to have to do the democracy. So the word politics comes from the word polis, which means city. So metropolis, Indianapolis, polis means city. Politics is the business of the city. So Athens had 6,000 citizens in their city, and everybody, every day, had to go to the marketplace called the Agora and talk about every issue, every single day. And if you didn't know what was going on every day, you were called an idiotus, an idiot. You don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very time consuming, and you had to basically spend every single day just keeping it up with what's being talked about. A republic is different. Republic comes from Rome, and in a republic is you take care of your family and your farm, and you have someone in your place that goes to the market every day and talks politics. They are your representative. So the REP in republic is the same REP in representative. So a republican form of government is a representative form of government. So a democracy, the people are king, ruling directly. You have to be there every day. A republic is where the people are king, ruling through their subcontracted representatives, right? And they're the ones that are carrying out the will of the people. So we pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic. We're basically pledging allegiance to us being in charge of ourselves, ruling through representatives. So you can take care of your farm and your family. Now, in America, we actually have a constitutional republic. What's that? That means that these representatives cannot do whatever they want. We give them guidelines. Congressmen every 2 years are reelected. Senators every 6 years. President every 4 years. You know, they can do this and that, but they can't take away our right to possess an arm. They can't take away our right to free speech. So these congressmen are limited by a constitution. So we sort of have a hybrid in America. Rome had had senators who were their representatives, but they were not elected representatives. They were hereditary. So a little history on Rome. Rome had a king named Tarquin, and he was a tyrant, and he had a son who raped a very virtuous woman called Lucretia. And in Rome, the women valued their chastity as a very, very high moral characteristic, and when she had hers stolen, she was so distraught that Lucretia got the Romans, you know, secondary leadership together, and she committed suicide right in front of them. Now, these Roman leaders are so upset, they decide to kill King Tarquin and his son and set up a republic where the people were these representatives. So there were 600 representatives in the Roman Republic and who represented their areas of where they came from. And they so much wanted to stay away from another king that they made it a rule that if anybody in Rome ever declared themselves a king, anybody could kill that person without any repercussions. So for 500 years, from 527 BC up to, you know, Augustus, nobody in Rome wanted to come anywhere close to being called a king. Publius, one of the founders of the Roman Republic, was building a big mansion in Rome, and when the rumor came around that he was thinking of being king, Publius destroyed his own mansion, right? And so Rome was a republic, and but they were hereditary positions, sort of like the British Parliament, you know, those House of Lords were hereditary positions. And so in America, we do a hybrid. We democratically elect our representatives, and these representatives are limited by a bunch of rules called a constitution. And the purpose of government, which is very important, is to protect our God-given rights. Hmm. Underneath of a king, the purpose of government is to carry out the king's will. So you have the king of France, Louis the 14th, the Sun King, and he said, "I am the state." Another time, King Louis the 14th was talking to an administrator, and he told him to do something. And the administrator said, "King, you can't do that. It's illegal." And the king said, "It is legal because I wish it." Oh, okay, I get it. The king is, the law is nothing more than the king's wishes, and the government's just carrying out the perfunctory carrying out of the king's wishes. In the Judeo-Christian models, we get rights from God, and the government's job is to protect our God-given rights. And so we have this, what I would call a hybrid seed, like a genetically engineered seed. So imagine scientists spending hundreds of years developing this perfect democratically elected constitutional republic to protect our God-given, guarantee our God-given rights. It took a long time to get this seed. But what do you do with seeds? You plant them in soil. Question, does the type of soil you plant a seed in have any correlation to the type of harvest that you will get? You could have the absolute best seed that can produce a 100-fold return, but if you plant it in a gravel parking lot, or in a sandy, saltwater-filled beach, or in tar, it's not going to have the same harvest as if you planted it in a nice, fertile soil. So if you think of it, we have this nice seed, this genetically engineered, democratically elected, constitutional republic, guaranteeing our God-given rights. We have this nice seed, and after the Berlin Wall falls, we go over to these former Soviet states, and we plant this seed. We give them a constitution, these different countries, identical to ours, but within a generation, their countries are taken over by the black market, the mafia, the organized crime, and it's no different than what they were before. And we scratch our heads thinking, why didn't the seed work? Well, you planted it in an atheistic soil. They had 70 years of atheism plowed into their soil where this life is all there is, do whatever you can to get ahead. And so then we get rid of Saddam Hussein. Courageous guys fighting and women fighting, and we get rid of the Saddam, and we go over there and we give them a constitution almost identical to ours. And in one election cycle, they vote in Sharia law, where it's the death penalty to leave Islam, and women can be beaten by their husbands. And we scratch our heads thinking, why didn't the seed bear the same kind of fruit that it did in America? Well, you planted it in an Islamic soil, and Islam has no constitution of equality. Women are not equal to men. Infidels aren't equal to Muslims, right? What happened in America is we took this seed and we planted it in a Judeo-Christian soil that believes that we all get rights from a creator, that the government's job is to protect, and everyone's equal. What? Men and women made in the image of the creator. Doesn't matter what color your skin is. Right? And so we have this abundant harvest that produced the most prosperous country in the history of the world with more individual freedom and liberty. So almost every political science course in college misses it. They spend all this time talking about this democratically elected constitutional republic, and they forget the type of soil that it needs to be planted in.
Bill Federer, our guest here today on Crosstalk, very, very informative, learning about these forms of government and what makes them thrive. And Bill, I know as we observe what's happening here in our United States of America, it seems we're on the brink of a precipice here. We're teetering back and forth as to which way we're going to go in all of this, because we are seeing the usurpation of authority that is not any longer we the people.
Right. So one of the phenomenons that came into being with people ruling themselves is people have to make decisions. And they can only make decisions on what they know. And so whoever controls the information of what the people knows actually controls the democracy of the republic. So let's look at Athens. So prior to Athens, you got kings. If you had an agenda and there is a king, you have to get in to speak with the king to pitch your agenda. So in China, they had emperors, and he had harems with 2,000 concubines, and they would be Mandarin eunuchs that would keep the harem. And the tradition was you would go to these Mandarins and bribe them with all kinds of money to say, can you arrange for me to meet the emperor? And you'd get in and pitch whatever it is. Well, Athens did not have an emperor, didn't have a king. It was the people. If you have an agenda, how do you pitch your agenda to 6,000 citizens? Well, you can be a really good busybody, but what they invented was theater. You'd get 6,000 people in an outdoor amphitheater, and you would put on plays where you would have comedies, tragedies, satires, where they would ridicule and buffoon certain points of view and honor and extol as noble other points of view. And you read these comedies like Aristophanes, and it's like Saturday Night Live. They would name the politician by name and make fun of him. And people would leave the theater saying, man, I don't want to be like that poor guy that was ridiculed to death. He looked like such a fool. But this other person, boy, he was noble, and he gave his life. And people would say, you know, I want to embrace the noble guy's views, and I want to shun the other guy's views. That's worked its way down to today, to Hollywood, to media, to TV, to theater, to music, to sports heroes. And so think of your favorite sitcom. There's a character you like. They're cute. They're funny. They're the hero. And as this series goes on, that character begins to make morally compromising decisions. A little lying here, a little cheating there, a little lust, a little revenge, and you find yourself apologizing for him. Saying, I know, you know, this nurse is fooling around, you know, or I know James Bond is with a woman he's not married to, but he's about to save the world. You know, this nurse is about to save somebody's life. And so it minimizes something that used to be important to you, marital fidelity. And then they make people that hold old traditional values to look like bumpkins and simpletons and idiots and backwards and fools and even hateful. And then they'll cast some character with alternative sexual views as the hero. And you'll turn off the show and say, you know, I don't want to be like that old fogey. Man, he looked so bad. He really was, you know, intolerant. And this other person, they were cool. They had, you know, and from that time, so this is how you manipulate the people. The people are in charge, but they can only vote on what they know. So it's a domino effect. So the people where it's called the popular government, not because it's the American Idol you vote, but word populist means people. So a popular form of government where the people are in charge. So in a popular form of government, how does it work? It's controlled by, in America, we're controlled by laws, but laws are put in place by politicians. Politicians are put in place by voters. Voters are put in place by votes, but they only vote on what they know. And all they know is what they're told in education, schools, and the media, and now the internet. So whoever controls education in schools, the media, and the internet controls America.
Wow. We're going to take a quick break. Bill Federer with us here today on Crosstalk. Friends, after the break, we're going to tell you how you can obtain his book and his DVD, Who is the King in America? Very, very informative. Matter of fact, we'd encourage you to get copies of this program that you can share with others or to take the link and send it to others and certainly to educate your children since we've thrown out civics in the school, a good lesson for us here today. Back in a minute with more information. You're listening to Crosstalk.
From Ray Comfort and Living Waters comes the dramatic film Audacity, tackling a very divisive issue today, homosexuality. Challenged by a co-worker to defend his convictions about homosexuality and same-sex marriage, Peter has to consider if he has the courage to stand for what he believes, even at the risk of losing a friendship. How will he respond when faced with a harrowing life or death experience? Audacity uses a unique approach to address a very contemporary issue and challenges the viewer to reach out and approach the greatest spiritual need everyone faces. Audacity is a 55-minute powerful dramatic film that will impact your life. Get your copy of Audacity for a donation of $5 or 5 copies for a donation of $18. 10 copies for $25 when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
friends, I hope you're getting a better understanding of where we are today as we talk about these forms of government, republic versus democracy, and other forms of government today. Bill Fetterer is our guest. As we mentioned, a nationally known speaker. He's a historian, best-selling author, and one of the books that he has put together is a very unique book, Who is the King in America? As Bill pointed out, throughout history, most nations, they were ruled by kings, power that concentrated into the hands of one person, and then he would reward his friends, he would punish his enemies, and the King of England, the most powerful king on the planet, had seen, so when Americans got the chance, they set up a government as far from a king as possible, a republic where the people are king, ruling their representatives. So, how do republics rise and fall? How do countries succumb or give themselves over to communist dictators? Well, these and other issues are addressed in his book, Who is the King in America? You'll discover what makes America unique and the keys to preserving our freedom. We are making this book available, Who is the King in America? Our way of saying thank you for your support of $18 or more. Now, Bill has also done a DVD where he teaches on this very issue, giving a presentation on this topic. And that DVD is also, if you'd rather have the DVD than the book, that's available for donation of $18 or more. However, if you'd like the set, one copy of the book, one copy of the DVD together as a set, we're making that available for donation of just $30. And if you'd like to obtain that, you can go online to our website at vcyamerica.org, vcyamerica.org, or you may call our switchboard at 1-800-729-9829, 1-800-729-9829. And you can request the book, you can request the DVD, or the combination. And, Bill, I know that the combination is what will really benefit people because they have things in print, but you also they have you addressing, you know, the issues at hand.
Right. The DVD, I actually have all the different pictures when I'm talking about Greece, and I have maps, and I have, you know, all the different quotes. It's a really, really great teaching tool. And then the book, if you purchase the book, there's a little email address in the front. You can email and get the entire book as a PDF file that you can read on your computer and even send to friends.
Wow. Okay. So, again, folks, we have the book available, donation of $18, or the DVD for a donation of $18. If you'd like them as a set, it's available for donation of $30. You can call our switchboard at 1-800-729-9829. That's 800-729-9829. Or by going to our website at vcyamerica.org. Vcyamerica.org. You'll see more of a write-up regarding this book there as well at vcyamerica.org. So, Bill, you made a very interesting point going right before the break about the people are able to respond based upon information they have. And certainly we see a great control over education today, control over media today, control over the internet today, social media. We see the huge controls that all plays into what the people know and understand, correct?
Right. So you see, actually the first instance in recorded history of a nation ruling themselves without a king was ancient Israel, that first 400-year period when they came out of Egypt. Right? So they came out of Egypt, and Moses comes down the mountain, and Moses has the law, but something that people sort of overlook is Moses had the law in a 22-character alphabet that was so easy to learn kids could learn how to read. Did you know in Egypt, only 1% of Egypt could read? They had 3,000 hieroglyphs, and the scribes kept them complicated on purpose as job security. They were needed as a class to interpret all these complicated hieroglyphs. In Mesopotamia, they had Sumerian cuneiform. There were 1,500 cuneiform characters. But it was just for kings and scribes to keep track of everything they owned. In China, at that time, Yu, the yellow emperor, with bamboo animal books, they came up with 10,000 Chinese characters. It was just for court records. The common people did not know these characters. And so when Moses comes down the mountain, he has the law in this simple 22 character. The first letter is Aleph. Second letter, Beth. Right? Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
And it was so easy. You had the first instance in recorded history of an educated populace. And so you take the power of a king, you separate it into the hands of the people. It's chaos unless the people are taught the law and they're educated. And the key ingredient was everybody is personally accountable to God to follow the law.
Hmm.
Now, kings rule because you're accountable to the king having a guard that can catch you and kill you. But in ancient Israel, there were no kings. There were no guards. It was the people in charge. And each person realized that they were personally accountable to God, that God was watching everyone. His law said that everyone has to be fair, do unto others as you would have them do it to you, and that he will hold you accountable in the future, whether this life or the next. So you're about to steal. Nobody's around. You know you can get away with it. And then you hesitate and think, well, God is watching me. He wants me to be fair. He's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I shouldn't steal. And it creates something in your head called a conscience. And so here we have Israel with an educated, moral populace with a conscience because everybody is individually accountable to God. Once you get rid of the teaching of God, and especially get rid of the teaching of the law, then all you have left is raw human passions and lusts. And so people unrestrained give into this, and it turns into that mob. And out of that mob, the chaos that comes, people go to Samuel the prophet, and they say, hey, this we just had, you know, a bunch of sodomites in this one tribe of Benjamin, you know, banged on the door, raped his concubine. The Levite chopped the poor girl into 12 pieces, sent to the 12 tribes, and they killed the Benjamite. You know, turned into chaos. And the people are like, look, this self-government system is not working anymore. We want to be like all the other countries. We want a king. And Samuel cries, and the Lord tells him, they did not reject you. They rejected me.
Right, right.
And
Bill, let me ask you this, and we'll be opening lines here in just a bit as well. What role does the morality of the people have in all of this, in this form of government? Is there a role of morality?
Yeah, there definitely is. That is the key ingredient to self-government, is the people have to govern their individual self. Otherwise, it turns into a mob. So Athens, democracy. Socrates lived at this time. There was a battle with an enemy on sea. The Athenian admiral wins the battle, but in the storm that happened afterwards, he was not able to rescue all the people that had fallen in the water. He gets back. Well, the people of Athens are furious that there were people that drowned in the water that could have been saved. And so they get whipped into this mob frenzy, and they kill the admiral. And Socrates sees this and says, whoa, this democracy, these people can be whipped with some kind of report from the media. They can be whipped into this emotional frenzy, and all rights are out the window. It's just mob rule. And so the idea is once you get rid of morals, or, you know, Plato called it virtue, it falls apart. The self-government falls apart. So an interesting study was done by an anthropologist, Oxford, named J.D. Unwin, U-N-W-I-N. He writes a book in 1934 called Sex and Culture. And he studied 80 civilizations over 5,000 years, and he found out a trend. What was the trend? That sexual promiscuity always precedes the destruction of a civilization.
So, say that again, Bill.
Sexual promiscuity always precedes the destruction of a civilization.
Hmm.
And so he says that a civilization usually goes through four stages. They begin with a period of pain and poverty. They come through a war. They come through a famine. They work hard, and they become productive. And they're all working hard. And then finally, it works, and they become prosperous. And then they want to enjoy their prosperity, and they become pleasure-focused and indulgent and sexually promiscuous. And then they get weakened, and then they get conquered by the next rising civilization. And so this casting off of moral restraints sexually and casting off self-control financially, they usually get in debt. They cast off their, you know, difference. They start robbing and stealing and looting, and it turns into this lawlessness. And again, they get weakened from the inside, and they either have some dictator that rises, some governor that comes along and says, I can restore order. I just need some emergency powers. And so the democracy ends with this dictator governor taking over, or they get weakened and they're conquered by some foreign power that takes advantage of their weakened condition.
Hmm.
Right?
Oh, my folks, do you see any correlations to what's going on in society today? Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. And Bill has done just a tremendous job here today informing us about these forms of government, republic versus democracy, oligarchy, monarchy, and certainly mentioned early on, too, the dictatorship of which socialism falls under as well. That's 800-733-9829, our phone number today for Crosstalk. And if you'd like to obtain the materials, the book, Who is the King in America, or the DVD, or the combo set, you'll need to contact the main switchboard at 800-729-9829. The direct dial number there is 414-935-3000. We're going to begin in Illinois. George, thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air.
Yes, I was going to ask the Bill a question. E pluribus unum on all of our coinage, which will no longer exist if we go to a data money, isn't that part of our pledge that we are one made up of many and we trust in God?
Okay, thank you, George.
Yeah, out of many one. Also, the motto is In God We Trust. They go together. It was Eisenhower who said, recognition of the supreme being is the first, the most basic expression of Americanism. So out of many, one, but you need something to gather around that we have in common as the one. And Eisenhower said, the thing that we can all agree on is God. And what type of God? It's a Judeo-Christian God of the Bible.
Mm.
At the time of the founding of the country, 98% of the country was Protestant. Virginia was Anglican, Massachusetts was Puritan, Rhode Island was Baptist, New York was Dutch Reform, you know, Delaware, New Jersey, Swedish Lutheran. But they were Protestant. 1% of the country was Catholic. They founded Maryland. And 0.1% of the country was Jewish. There was only 7 synagogues in the whole country. At the time of the Revolution, there were 3,000 Jews in a country of 3 million mm-hmm. people. And then there's an Irish potato famine, early 1800s, millions of Irish Catholics come to America. Then there's a Jewish persecution. Jews start coming over, especially in the 1890s.
Tell you what, Bill, we did a whole program on that, and I know that could take the rest of our program today. We got a lot of callers lined up here, but folks, you can go back, go to crosstalkamerica.com. You'll learn more about that. But thanks for answering his question there. Leela is next, Scottsdale, Arizona. You're on the air, Leela.
Yeah, hi. I'm an OBGYN in Phoenix, Arizona, and I just want to say a very, very special thank you. To the information that I've been hearing. I haven't been able to put my finger on and bring it all together, but mm-hmm. I've been sensing what's been happening, particularly among my teenagers and even my younger children on social media, on TikTok and different things, and actually in society at large. I've noticed that our mentality is very much dictated by our social media, and I just want to say a really special thank you, and I want to do anything I can to get your information out to the people, because it really is enlightening. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Leela, for your call. We're up against a break, back in 1 minute, and we'll be repeating how you can obtain this information after the break. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Recently, I had in my TV studio and on my radio show an attorney from Michigan, Matt DiPerno. Matt is the only attorney in the United States of America to get a court order to do a forensic audit of Dominion voting machines. He reported to us that after having a forensic audit done by experts, they found many problems with the Dominion machines, including, he reported, a 68% failure rate. He also said that when they went in there to look at the machines, the logs, like the system files, the adjudication files, the log files, they were gone. We also find, he says, that even blank ballots that are shoved through the machine are counted as a vote, and then they're sent to what's called adjudication, where someone or a group of people decide who they think you meant to vote for. We have a serious problem with our voting system in America, and the American people must demand free and fair elections to be a free and fair country.
We appreciate the call from Leela in Scottsdale, Arizona, who called in a bit ago just saying, thank you so much for this information. Now, you know, my eyes of understanding are open as I see the impact social media is having on our children and the impact of, you know, what we control, what we feed them with is what's going to come out and what their level of understanding is. Just a reminder, in just a couple of hours, this program is going to be linked up at our website, crosstalkamerica.com, and you can send the copies of this, send links out to others, and distribute the information. You can obtain a CD copy of this or multiple CDs of this program. We make them available for donation of $6. Again, his book, Who is the King in America? Donation of $18, or his DVD in which he's instructing. You've got the visuals right there, too. That's available for an $18 donation. Or the set of Who is the King in America book and the DVD is available for donation of $30. You can go online at vcyamerica.org or call 800-729-9829. That's also where you can get copies of this program, 800-729-9829. Let's go to St. Mary's, West Virginia. Russell, you're on the air.
So you cannot rule a country under executive orders, or you are a dictator. So he's a self-proclaimed dictator. So exactly what form of government are we under right now?
Well, that's the big question right now as to what form of government. That's why this program is so important, that we understand these forms of government, Russell, and to understand that it's another whole program, too. It's dealing with the three branches of government and separation of powers. That would be another great program to come back to. Racine, Wisconsin. Robert, you're on the air.
When I get time, I won't do nothing.
Robert, you're on the air. Go ahead.
And today is church. So.
Okay, let's go to Mark in Newark, Ohio. Mark, you're on the air.
Yes, I just listened to your program before you and with him and with
Mark, we need to stick with this program here today. We've got many listeners who didn't hear what you heard.
Yeah, I am. It correlates what he's doing. It's basically what he's talking about. And how are you going to fight the media when they are, I don't know, I guess they're all in that one agenda to keep us in a democracy, or not a democracy, but a republic. I'm sorry. I hate using that word democracy, too.
Mark, you've raised a good question. Bill, when we see the media, they all become of one voice, and we see what's happening in social media and the censoring out of any conservative thought or constitutional thought in that regard. How do we reverse this trend?
Yeah, it's very difficult, but it can be done. I think getting onto these new platforms, you know, there's lots of USA.life, MeWe, Gab, Telegram, you know, Signal. Begin to, you know, if you get a blood clot, you have new veins and arteries, you have to sort of connect around it to keep your blood flowing. Also the radio, you're supporting programs like this, and then also focusing on local politics.
Mm-hmm.
The nationals might be able to be fiddled with, but on the local level, running people for school boards and things like that.
Yeah.
It's a challenge, but the good Lord decided for you and I to be alive at this time.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what's going on. He's given us his word, his spirit, great Christian friends. This is our turn. This is our chance to shine and let Jesus use us.
Amen. Thank you for that call here, Mark, and Bill, your response. And Bill echoes what we've heard from other guests here, too, as focus on those local elections. So we talk about what's happening in our schools. And yet I hear from many people who say, well, we don't vote in those. You know, that's just school board, or that's just city council. What impact do they have? There is a huge impact that's coming through these elected offices. I mean, as they determine the curricula for children or determine city policies, and are we going to be part of this, you know, Agenda 21 type issue. Those are all happening on the local level, giving ourselves over. So these are critical elections. And keep in mind, George Soros found the importance of supporting local district attorneys who decide whether to enforce laws or not. Let's go to Chester in Salem, West Virginia. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I know that in his early days, Biden says he's worried about the economy, but yet with the stroke of a pen, what we call executive orders, he wipes out about 600,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And we elect our officials thinking that they're going to stand for us. But my question is, when they get in there, and as he said, a dictator works through executive orders and runs things with executive orders. What can be done to get them out of there or have people override the executive orders?
Okay, thank you, Chester. Bill?
Congress is supposed to limit the president. They're not doing their job. Obviously, they've been co-opted, but we need to put pressure. No general wants to charge into battle and turn around and see that there is no army behind him. So we want these good guys to go up there and fight, but we need to be behind them. We need to support them. I think we should be giving awards to those with courage. These young congresswomen, one from Georgia and one from Colorado and so forth, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, the people that have backbone, we need to publicly applaud them, give them a little cover. The battle is in the public arena. After World War II, we began to see communists want to take over countries. They call them behind the Iron Curtain, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, mm-hmm. Poland, Romania. And they would come into countries, break the groups into ethnic and economic haves and have-nots, victims and oppressors, and then they would divide them, stir them into riots, and then they would co-opt the media with bribes and threats to blame the leader, and then they would do coups. And 45 countries fell to this. But the media is important. They ended up giving it a term called psychological operation. And during World War II, our country would drop pamphlets down on the enemy, and they'd read these pamphlets and says, your side already lost, but your commander didn't tell you, just to confuse their minds. With Tokyo Rose, a Japanese woman with a sweet-sounding, American voice, would go on the radio to try to tell the Americans, that they're terrible and they're losing. You want to mess with, so this is called a psychological operation, that when you take over a country, you want to control the media voices.
Well, we got to stop there. We got to leave it there. We've run out of time. We've got less than half a minute. We apologize to other callers here as well that we're not able to get any more calls in on the program. Bill Fitter is our guest. You can take the information you've learned and share it with others. Wasn't the prophet Hosea who said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge? Certainly we can understand even the foundations of our nation. Bill has written the book, Who is the King in America? The DVD is available, or the set available for donation of $30. You may go to vcyamerica.org. Or call 800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829. Or get a copy of this program or send a link to share with others. Bill, thank you so much for carving time out to join our listeners here today.
Thank you, Jim, and thanks for all those that called in.
Okay, and friends, thanks for joining us here today. Republic versus democracy and other forms of government. Thanks for being informed and joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.